don't feed me, because I know what I want. Please deliver me, that's all out of your soul. It makes you freeze time, staring in at yourself. It's time to step outside onto the path you once made.
So welcome to another episode of Tim Pod Brain Leakage, where I'm rewatching Doctor Who episodes from the beginning, starting with the very first story, An Earthly Child. And today we'll be watching episode 2 of An Earthly Child, also known as The Cave of Skulls, but we won't get into those early titles per episode thing because it just gets really confusing to anybody who's just watching the show now. Before we jump into this, let's do a little promo stuff and just remind people that if you want to watch, if you want to catch up on all things 10 Universe, go to 10universe.blogspot.com. That's where you'll find links to everything, like my Zazzle store, which is zazzle.com/10universe. And also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Hang of Wednesday. And my personal blog, which I hardly ever update, and probably won't even more now that I'm doing these podcasts, is under the training book. .blogspot.com. And that's enough promotional stuff for now. I'm going to get into this first episode. Second episode, actually. And I want to do these probably at least regularly. I'm going to record a bunch in the next couple weeks. Because on the 12th, which I don't know if this is going to come out before or after the 12th, but on the 12th of this month, in August, I'm going to have my second surgery on my lower jaw. To have all my lower teeth repaired and had my jaw repaired, which I had done on the top one, too. So I'm going to get a lot in the bank, so to speak, so I can have those in release regularly. But also, so probably after I pull it, I'm like having it to be recorded very much for a while, so I'll have some in the bank to do it. I'm also going to start a podcast, and it's called I Wish I Was Brave Enough, and it's basically the podcast. It's going to be, it's still Tim Pod. I don't really want to separate them right now. Maybe in the future I will. But it's going to be me talking about comics. And I'm going to start with Valiant Comics, the classic Valiants that I read years ago, which I like the new Valiant books, but classic ones. And I'm going to start with a timeline I found a long time ago. And it'll be Time Walker, number 0 will be the first one. So that's going to be a series as I go through all those too, just like these Doctor Who ones, and hopefully people like those. Both were actually inspired by a podcast called Fantasticast, which is really cool, that goes in order of all the Fantastic Four books. So if you're a Fantastic Four fan, you might want to check that podcast out. But get ready to start this episode, An Earthly Child Part 2, and we can get into Caveman fun, which is always fun. Not really so much, but I've never liked caveman stories all that much. Very few, and I can't right off the head remember very many at all. I think there's a really good episode of Batman the Brave and the Bold that has to do with, but it seems like if you don't handle it comedically, it just gets really rough and bad. I don't know, but like, this Doctor Who one's, I think it's pretty good. There's some really good moments in it. Hopefully explore, but the episode's opening with the TARDIS and the mysterious shadow after Ian and Barbara cause the TARDIS to go out of control into time and space. And now you see a caveman watching the TARDIS, wondering what it is, just staring blankly. But this first story It's got some really good points. I think it's worth watching for Doctor Who fans if you want to explore the classic series. Like, if you want to, if you're open-minded to exploring it, just watch it from the beginning and stuff. You don't have problems with, like, old effects or stuff being in black and white. But there's some really good moments that are established in this caveman part of Unearthly Child with the Doctor. You get to see a little hint of his almost darker side, which is really early on. I've heard people try to say that's later in the series. Not really. It's early on. It shows a very early dark side of the Doctor. And William Hartnell's actually really good at the different moods of him. A lot of people think he's just grouchy, but he's not. He shows a very loving side to Barbara at times. And I think, yeah, of course, to Susan, his granddaughter. But, and you can't have a caveman story without somebody showing, somebody trying to make fire. And that's basically what the gist of the story is in the long run, is fire. And of course the Doctor gets involved in all this, and this clan tribal struggle, political struggle for power within it. But I, like I've said, I'm not the hugest fan of this part of Unearthly Child. I love the very first episode. I think it's one of the best episodes of Doctor Who ever, the part one of Unearthly Child. But from here, I don't even know it's good and stuff. I just go, I'm, because I've always had this problem with caveman stories, I go in automatically pre-existing thoughts towards them. Even like with comics, whenever they do a comic book story and it immediately see it's caveman stuff, I'm like, ugh. Because very few people get it right. And I think people try to be too smart with it sometimes, and or they try to be too real and gritty with it, and it's just like, tell a story. You know, if it's hunters and gathering time, like in the history of humanity, then just tell a simple hunter-gatherer story. You don't have to be groundbreaking with it and stuff. And like, I always, like, when you research Doctor Who, in the beginning they was wanting to make this educational show, adventure show for kids. I always found that doing a caveman story, I think that would have been really controversial in the United States, and I don't know if it was then. I've never read anything where it was, but I think it would have been here, because, like, still you got, you know, people would believe there was cavemen riding dinosaurs with machine guns hunting down, you know, people and stuff like that, and I don't know, people are just nuts here about shit like that. But now Ian and Barbara are waking up from the TARDIS trip. But, like, how many times did Ian get knocked out in this series? Ian's like the detective of Doctor Who. In fact, he gets knocked out so many times, he must have had, like, concussion syndrome. But, and you got Susan, who's just standing there automatically and stuff. I think, I mean, it's a valid criticism that Doctor Who tends to have female characters who aren't as strong at points as they need to be. I think they're good at creating ones. They create really good female characters. In the history of Doctor Who, they've always created really good female characters. There's very few ones that aren't strong, aren't intelligent. And then the writers just really didn't write them that way. Whether that was a dictation from producers or from head honchos or not, they had the characters there. They had really good characters. They just didn't use them very well. So I would blame the writers more than the creators of the characters at points. Because Susan's effect, that Susan has, like, at times she's like the strongest character on the show in the beginning. And at times she just floats off and becomes a normal character. And she's not. She should be right there with the Doctor, like a younger version of him. I think, like, when you get one of these series like this, they want to establish who the characters are. And, like, that's a very good thing to do in stories. I've found it, like, it's hard to do and do right. I find the introduction of characters the very hardest thing to do right in writing. And hardest is, like, a wrong thing to say if you want to claim to be a writer. But, like, if you have a concept in your head where you can see when you're not doing something right, which most writers do, they just ignore it at times. I found it so hard to introduce characters to readers and make it flow, where it doesn't appear that you're introducing characters, that you're introducing character traits, that you're introducing story points or plot points for future or foreshadowing in the future. It's hard to do that and do it right. Now, for example, the Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost movies with like Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and World's End. Those movies use foreshadowing so well, but if you watch the movies for the first time, you don't see it in the beginning. And you see it at the end, but you might not notice it. When you rewatch it, you notice the foreshadowing. That's all over their stuff. And visuals and vocab dialogue and such. But I can't do too many pauses in this, I don't think, because like if I pause for too long, I'm going to have to do a lot of editing. Because this is playing in the background while I'm talking. And so I don't know if the noise cut effect, whatever it's really called in this program, and the Audacity will actually cut out long pauses as I look at something. And why is the visual of the TARDIS slanted always like a cool visual? I don't know, it's like, I think it's because TARDIS to a lot of viewers is like this bedrock. So whenever it's tilted or upside down or to the side, it's great. And the novel people, they got like a TARDIS, you got a symbol. Like, you don't even have to have like stock photos or anything. You can just use the TARDIS in so much stuff. Just stick it in the background, stick it doing this, or use it as this visual. And you got a good visual, and that's great for stories, especially on book covers and such, because you can just really have those. And fans have run with it with the TARDIS and so much stuff these days. So many t-shirt designs and fan art and stuff uses the TARDIS. And another example of how these big companies, when fans do this shit, they really need to contact some of these people and be like, dude, let's make a deal, you know. We got the rights to this. You created this great art. Let's do a partnership. We pay you so much. And like if we'd commissioned you from the beginning, like they need to do that. And this is one other thing right now. We're finding the skull by Barbara, which I liked in the beginning. Because they were true explorers. Like Ian and Barbara liked finding stuff. They were educators. And they had such curiosity. That sometimes I think the only person who had that sometimes in the TARDIS tended to be the doctor, and everybody else was just complaining, you know, had Tegan syndrome or something like that, where it's mainly complaining and not having fun. I think my favorite characters that actually do it are Ian and Barbara and Nessa. Nessa? That's how you say it. Later with the fifth doctor, and briefly with the fourth doctor. Like, she always had that, which has been explored, like, I think even more in the audios with the Fifth Doctor and her. The Big Finish audios, which are really good. Oh, and somebody asked me if I was going to plug in books and Big Finish audios as I do this podcast with the Doctor Who stories. I'm not going in that far much. Even though my bookshelf used to be laid out as, like, you would have graphic novels, novel, prose novels, you'd have Big Finish novels in the so-called canon order. I don't do it as much just because I got so much stuff now. And it's hard to keep up with putting the stuff in order. But, no, I'm not going to do that. No. Maybe when I get to the end of, like, let's say the first Doctor ones, maybe, if or the second or the third or whatever, I might go back and read some of the comics and then the podcast about those or listen to some of the audios, podcast those. I haven't decided yet, but right now it's just the TV episodes because it's, basically, I'm never going to finish these TV episodes ever. There's too much Doctor Who. It's never, this is a lifelong project. I'd never finish this before, like, people stop podcasting and it'll be beamed from my brain or something like that. But Mara was telling me, like, she's like, I bet you doing these by yourself, you're just going to rant about Doctor Who and never talk about the story. And it's like, well, yeah, kind of, but I'm also talking about the story. And now it's one of those panic states that Susan goes in, which I really didn't like. And I think, like, I don't know if any Doctor Who writers have in expanded universes have ever explored this, but when Susan does this ever so often, when she gets, like, this really panicked state, I've always, like, since it's kind of been hinted at that Susan was pulled out of a time of war by the Doctor, maybe the Time War, I don't know, and taken from Gallifrey. Maybe she has, like, post-traumatic stress disorder. Like, maybe she has a little bit of that. I mean, obviously they probably didn't mean that originally, but I think it would be an interesting thing to explore in a story. And if people haven't done that, I'm surprised they haven't. Because Carrion Ford's, like, portrayal of Susan sometimes has her, like, all of a sudden do that. Like, all of a sudden she becomes very hysterical. And I know people have said, like, well, that's, like, teenagers, they did it. But, you know, Susan's not supposed to be a normal teenager. That's the whole point of her character. She's an unearthly child. Yeah, I did that. But I like it in some ways that Susan's, like, more teenagey. This is what happens when I'm here on my own. Mara's off doing Harry Potter stuff as they released the so-called 8th book. Now, that ain't some misleading advertising. It's called a script book or a playbook. It's not an 8th book. And I'm surprised a lot of people aren't going to be really, really fucking pissed about that. I know I've talked to people about it, and they're like, oh, you like Harry Potter? Are you buying the 8th book? And I'm like, well, it's not an 8th book. I want to read the script, though. But it is an 8th book. No, it's not. It's not an 8th prose book. Sorry, but it's not. I love reading scripts, so I'll really enjoy reading it, because that's originally what I started writing, and what my education in writing was writing scripts for film and TV. Never did it much, but, you know, that's what I did, so I actually enjoy reading them. Okay, now the Doctor's been captured by the caveman. I think it's a weird term, like, the one guy was like, this is a strange creature. He's an old man. Why is clothes such a weird thing in TV shows when they do period things? It's like, might be unusual clothes, but it's just clothes. And the other guy's like, why are you afraid of an old man? From the very beginning, they make the more aggressive guy, like, dumb. You can be smart and aggressive. I mean, very intelligent, very ruthless people. Like, I never liked that betrayal much, where they always make evil or bad stupid. That's just not true. I'm sorry, it's not true. It's like when they make evil or bad unhuman. You know, that's very much my traits, is being evil and bad. We try to fight against it, but it is. Now it's a cave speech to rally his troops against the cold. You know. And of course, this is one of those episodes of Doctor Who early on where there's no alien. There's no otherworldly force. There's no otherworldly visitor except for the Doctor and his crew. Which I know a lot of modern people say you can't do in Doctor Who, but that's so, it's just lazy. It's like, yes, you can. Like, don't act like the viewers can't handle it. They can. You can also use it as a misdirection. If you're never going to have episodes of a show like Doctor Who where it's not an alien, where it's not anything fantasy or sci-fi, then don't do episodes where you hint or you try to say it's not and then there's a bigger reveal that it is something weird. Because that doesn't work. That's not how you tell a story. You got to keep people guessing. You got to let them think it could be one way or the other. Because if you just paint it one way all the time, you can't ever get people to think it might be the other way. Now, I might not be the best person to talk about this subject, just because I can't articulate it, but they really, it's a looking down on the audience, but it's also just lazy. As a friend of mine said, like, you can't expect your audience, your readers, your viewers, to be intelligent when you're not writing intelligent work. And then intelligent work takes a lot of work to write, you know. And it takes support from producers and people like that to write intelligent work too. It's just not on the writers. But everybody's got to work hard to do that. And right now, I think one of the biggest problems with Doctor Who is there's not the unpredictable. It's very much predictable. That's what I was trying to say. And I have the same problem with professional wrestling. For years and years and years, it's been the most predictable thing in the world. Now, the last few episodes of like WWE, getting off on the tangent of wrestling from Doctor Who, they've actually did some unpredictable stuff that, you know, was great. It made it so exciting, even though it wasn't the best episodes in the world. You showed unpredictability. You always have to have unpredictability in a story. It doesn't mean you have like a period piece and all of a sudden there's like aliens. That's not unpredictability. That can be very predictable, which it is in Doctor Who right now. It's very predictable that any story is going to have aliens involved or supernatural involved or all that stuff. Right now it's within the Stephen Moffat era, which I think gets more shit than it should. Like, he has his faults, but one of his biggest faults is the fact that he made everything so connected that when it's not connected, we are disappointed, in a bad way disappointed. And also, when it is connected, we're like, oh, of course. Because everything's connected with his stories. And such minute details. And people get too obsessed with the minute details. That's why Bad Wolf worked so well with T. Davis. It was really a simple thing. It was just painted on stuff or mentioned and stuff. It wasn't this thread that drove people crazy trying to find. Or when it was at the end, he was like, oh, this is what it was all along. And it's like, yeah, but that would have been boring to have to watch for all that all along. But that's my tangent while watching this. And like I said, I'm not the hugest fan of K-Man stories. Especially when you're sitting there yelling fire. And it, like, K-Man stories turn into the, like, this is local theater at its worst. K-Man stories. Everybody's doing speeches and everybody's yelling. But, like, yeah, I'm probably on each one of these. Probably gonna go on a little Doctor Who rant from time to time as I watch it. But I promise not to fast forward through any of it. Even though this episode might not be as long as the actual episodes, because I'm gonna try to edit better from now in the podcast. It's one of the things I wanna do. I wanna learn how to edit episodes better overall. And now the doctor's getting roughed up. Whenever, like, William Hartnell's doctor gets manhandled, he always has this look like, why are you touching me? And I don't know if it just comes from the actor or if, like, other actors manhandling him and maybe he doesn't like it. But, like, it's like, why are you touching me? He always has this, like, and he's always listening. And I don't know if the actor's listening to cues, but I think it works as a character because, like, he's, like, he's always listening to who's behind you. You can see it with his eyes a lot of times. Now Susan jumping in action on somebody's back. Says, you hurt my grandfather. I'm going to go after you. Now Ian's there is the muscle. And now the doctor threatens. He dies. No fire. I mean, how many stories were by... I think they did it a lot in the short trips. Short story collections. That was produced by a long time. I think those started at Virgin and then they went to BBC, took over publications. But there's several in there that's basically what happened to Ian at different points in these early stories because he was always getting knocked out or captured or something. And I remember a really good one that I think was set during the Romans, I think it was, story. A television story, which has him in like this pit and he thinks he's going to die. I remember I read it a long time ago, so I ain't got the best memory in the world. That's why I can reread stuff, and it's pretty fun. But he explores that with Ian. He's a very strong character, I think. And so is Barbara. I love Barbara's character. Like, I remember, I think I said on the last podcast, I don't think I liked her and Ian as much when I was younger, because I was like, I don't like... When I was younger, I didn't like seeing these older characters on the show. But looking back, the actors did very well. The writing was pretty good for them for the most part. They'll be strong and inquisitive. At times it gets irritating when they're like, why can't you take us home? Why can't you take us home? Which gets irritating with all the characters in Doctor Who sometimes when they're fussing about that so much. But, yeah. I just held in a burp. Ugh, I hope it did. Be bad if I can't edit out a whole held in burp. Yeah, that's me. Getting close to the end of this episode, I think. What I'm gonna try to do is like rewatch the previous episode before I go into these, and I will need to start watching the episode, take notes, and then watch it again. But I don't have time tonight because, like I said, I want to record a bunch of podcasts and have them and ready to release when I have my leading up to my surgery and after my surgery. So I'm gonna do like I think a couple of these ones. And then I'm going to do the Valiant series, and then do more with Mar, and then I'm going to do a new series with my editor, Queen, Dina, and it's going to be all of us, like when we watch stuff, TV shows and stuff like that. And like, somebody asked me why, like, it's just called Tim Pod, and like, why am I not just talking about my stories all the time? And I was like, well, I started this for a couple reasons. I started it, one, to promote my work. But I can't sit here and talk about all of it all the time. I give promotions out, I give out links to start episodes, you know, any promotion, any new releases and stuff. That's enough. I don't need to sit and talk about it all the time unless it comes up. Two, I wanted to have a place to put, because I'm going to start having people record audio versions of the books, the 10 Universe Middle Grade stories, and probably other stories too, but I'm going to start probably chapter by chapter in the middle grade books first, and I'm going to release them slowly, and so I wanted the podcast to be that too. But also this is to get it over a lot of anxiety I have when it comes to talking in public, especially when I started to have my teeth pulled. It's very self-conscious about it, the way I sound, because my voice keeps changing as they pull my teeth, which is kind of aggravating, but I was inspired by Stacy from Stacy's Pop Culture Parlor, which is one of my favorite podcasts ever, and I was inspired to do this podcast, and it helped. It's helping me be more open, talking about my issues, but also talking in general, just talking. But so that's the ending music for this episode, and I hope you're having fun, and I hope I get better at talking about more interesting stuff, and in the future maybe have some guests on this podcast. Maybe I can talk more one of these days into watching a Doctor Who episode with me. Don't think it's gonna happen, but maybe it will. You just never know.